Greetings and welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod, a sometimes funny, trying to be smart podcast covering all things new and classic Trek. This guy works out. I'm your Captain Mariah Gossett with me on the view screen.
Oh, you're not talking about me? You're not talking about me? I thought you were talking about me.
What's going on, Clyde?
I'm Clyde Haynes. I'm excited. We got randos. We got bosses. Yo, give it up for Trina. I just like Trina for real. Like I was 90s rapper. I was like, yo, she's a boss. I'm a big fan. Big fan.
And we also have our professional associate with us this evening, Jesse. Welcome. Oh, you're muted. You have to unmute
yourself. I'm muted. Dang it. I was you called me professional associate, and then the first thing I do, I'm already muted. So it's like what a title. What a title.
Welcome to the podcast this evening, Jesse. We're so happy to have you. Yeah. I guess just first up, if you all aren't watching, Jesse does a great job of recapping these episodes over on her channel on After Dark. But I would love to just get a quick, like, what are you thinking of the season so far?
I am loving it. I know it's still probably going to end up being its usual, like the entire Federation or whatever is at stake. But I am enjoying the kind of more low key, just fun adventure vibe, like Indiana Jones type of story that we've got going on. Like, I think that's honestly like a fun, refreshing take, not only for Discovery, but for like modern Star Trek generally. So I've just been really kind of enjoying it. So.
Totally. Yes. And so tonight we are recapping and discussing Janal, which was directed by Andy Armaganin. I always want to say Armageddon. and it's written by Kyle Jarrow and Lauren Wilkinson. Just a couple of reminders before we really dig into the details of this episode. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. If you listen to us, you can watch us. If you watch us, you can also listen to us. All the links are at StarTrekPod.co. And if you enjoy our content and want to hang out with us even more or hang out with the other people that you see in the chat on YouTube for even more time for rewatches, all kinds of fun, you can join us on the Patreon for just $2 per episode. And that's at patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Clyde, if people are hanging out with us tonight, how should they get our attention in the chat? If they've got a question, a comment, some fresh takes, if you will.
Mime. Just
mime it.
And we'll figure it out. No.
Do some voguing.
Yes, vogue is another one. You know, bust a move. Like, honestly, if you just start dancing in the chat, we will
know.
No, seriously, if you're watching us live, we love it when you watch us live. So if you're listening, hey, I'll say it, Thursday night at 10 o'clock Central or 8 o'clock Pacific or 11 p.m. Eastern. Come on, join us. Yeah. Yeah. Come and join us to talk about some Trek. But if you're in the live chat, just type capital P, capital O, capital D, capital Pod, and we'll take a look at your thought, your musing, your comment, your question. And in a moment, we're going to have that special time where we want to wrap up and get your overall thought of this particular episode. Just type capital H, capital F, capital HF in the chat, and we'll take a look at your thoughts about the episode.
Indeed. And I think it is time for us to dig into those hot, spicy takes. You might call them hot freaks.
Hot freaks! Hot freaks!
It's time for some hot freaks. This is where we give a quick 30-second recap of what our thoughts were of this particular episode, a la like a Lost Culturistas rant, if anyone else listens to that show. quickly, though, Jesse, what did you think of this episode?
I loved this episode. I mean, we went to my favorite planet in Star Trek, or second favorite planet, but my favorite species in all of Star Trek, the Trill, and got to explore more of that. I loved that. I also adored seeing Saru getting to exist outside of Starfleet and developing that relationship, as well as kind of getting more background and everything. But I think the best part was just Wilson Cruz getting to just have so much fun throughout this episode. I adored every single moment with him. And it all came put into this wonderful wrapper of why I love Star Trek Discovery the most, which is it is such a series about connection and how we handle relationships and conflict between each other and ourselves, and how that's naturally going to arise, but how Star Trek hopefully our eventual arc as a species is to understand that while conflict will come up, we are always about trying to figure out how we get through that in a positive and healthy direction. And that's why I love Discovery. So yeah, I adored this episode.
Totally. Clyde, thoughts?
I also love this episode. I mean, at one point, I kind of found myself thinking, am I watching Star Trek 90210? But I loved it. Like, it was, you had the right mix of, I don't want to say relationship drama, but it was like relationship nuance, right? From a variety of levels. You've got this will they, won't they between Book and Michael. You've got this new relationship, a mature relationship between Tarina and Saru. You've got the young relationship, not a relationship between Gray and Adira. Like, there's so many. And then you got all these new people that are walking around like they belong. And I'm like, really? You're just going to show up in the last season like you've been here the whole time? I think not. And also revelations about Linus. Like, well, yes, I thought this was a great episode. It's one, I think that my favorite thing, and I can't wait to talk about it so much, but one of my favorite things is this is felt like a complete episode. It's one of those where you don't want to miss a minute, like from the beginning to the very last scene. Don't turn away. Like that, it was full. Like I really like this episode. I don't want to get too hyperbolic in it, but I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. This one's really up there for me as well. I really enjoyed, I feel like this season so far has had some of my favorite kind of two-hander scenes that we've had in a while. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's some really smart pairings. I really enjoy Burnham, Book, and Colbert as like a little trio, because I think there's a fun, interesting friendship dynamic between Colbert and Book, as well as the tension between Burnham and Book romantically. So I thought that was a fun way to play with that. And then I agree, this was like a really beautiful way to show the evolution of different types of relationships and how those can evolve over time and what it means at different stages of your life, I think, as well. And Wilson Cruz, just like true MVP of the episode, truly a delight. Like the moment that switch happened, and we're going to dig into it, but I was like, oh, I'm ready to love this episode for the rest of the time.
I cannot get out of my head him saying, I just follow the path. I just can't, yeah. I can't get that out of my head. It was perfect.
It was perfect.
It was such a wonderful showcasing of talent. Like, when you think about this cast, one thing I love about this cast is it's so talented. So when you have somebody like Wilson Cruz, who's largely been playing this note throughout the season, you know, so far and for a while now, you occasionally got to let him stretch his legs and show you, like, you know, just I'm more than just where you this have guy. Me. And this was like, whoo, to your point, Mariah, from the moment that switch happened, you were like, ah, look out. Yeah. Like, just buckle up. He's about to do it.
I was like, oh, we're in the hands of a professional. I'm ready.
Just take me away.
Take me away, Wilson Cruz. Some comments from the gallery here. We have Nicole Hotfrake. Love the looks. Book was throwing Michael's way. Also sad about Adira. I love them so much and want them to be happy. Me too. But I think there's happiness in finding yourself. So I think we're on a good path there. And we have sad commentary that Rainer's descriptions of Reese, Pollard, and Linus are more character development for them than we've gotten in four seasons. I feel like they're trying to remedy that. And that's why it also makes me sad that this is our last season, because I feel like they finally redirected the ship, I think, in a very fun direction this season so far. We also have a couple messages from the Menagerie, which is a bonus. If you are one of our patrons, you can let us know what your hot freaks are early. So maybe if you're someone who's like, I'm not a night owl, but I still want to participate, you can let us know. Karen says, I really enjoyed this episode a lot. Blue is amazing. I'm not super invested in the young adult relationship, but I thought they nailed this really well. Love Tilly and Rainer together. Special kind of chemistry. Tilly is an absolute delight in this episode. She's also really, as a character, turned into everything I wanted her to be. Really enjoyed seeing Cruz inhabit a different character who seemed very interesting and cool. And some favorite lines, but we're going to get into those later, so I'm going to save them. Mag says, emotionally overwhelming should be Disco's tagline.
Facts.
Tour de force from Wilson Cruz. This is probably my favorite episode of the season. A good mix of multiple stories with a strong Trek message about building understanding. The Gray Adira part wasn't my favorite, but that story needed a resolution. So, but I think it was like a nice, I guess we can start kind of there. Sure. This was definitely a relationship episode and about different stages of relationships. And I kind of enjoyed that we got to see the full span of what does it mean to be young and in relationships where you're still finding yourself and perhaps you need to grow apart in order to grow individually. And then also the idea that Saru and Tarina Tarina has such wisdom about what she wants in a relationship. And then I feel like Saru is still like, oh, this is how relationships are supposed to work. Really lovely combination to sort of see the two sides of the spectrum. But what did you think of our two love stories in this episode?
I'll jump in and say it felt real, right? Like, listen, the thing about sci-fi that's so fantastic is it's fantastical. It is imaginary. And often with Star Trek, what we get is we're getting this idealized version of the future that we want, right? Even with some challenges and conflict, but, you know, we're on a starship, so it's amazing. But what these relationships represent to me were something that was really, really real. But if you think about it, so from a Gray and Adira standpoint, you've got two people who have had significant change in their lives. And while they were everything to each other when, oddly, honestly enough, that's all they had, now they've had this huge transition. They're far apart. And look, If I said, raise your hand if you've had a long distance relationship that was perfect and always worked, and you raised your hand, I'd be like, great, write a book. because for most of us, those things are really, really tough, especially when you're young and going through all that. So the fact that they would come to that point, it was done beautifully. Mm-hmm. And then Tarina and Saru, I think you nailed it, Mariah, and this, you've got this. They're mature, right? Neither one of them is spring chickens, which I love. But they come to this point where Saru's like, well, of course, I'll sacrifice what I want.
I will protect you.
To protect you. And she was just like, do I look like I need your protection? Did I ask you for your protection? I was like, yeah. But not in a way where she was angry at him and was like, this is off, but in a very mature way of saying, hey, like, I understand what's going on here. And as much as I care about you, that's not what I want. And here's why. That was really mature and beautiful. And I was like, hello, couple goals. Like, can we all be like that? Can we have that type of conversation? So for me, it was so, so real. And so I was for it. You can see I'm excited about it because I just thought, like, really well done. Kudos, Star Trek.
Yeah, I think what I love about Saru and Tarina is that they both seem, I don't know, like they haven't quite probably had this kind of relationship before, especially because we've followed Saru for so long. We know that this is sort of the first foray into this. I do wish we got to see more. It feels like we went from like yearning and pawning for each other to just like engaged, and we've sort of skipped some of those other steps. But it feels like they're trying to sort of ease us through of like, oh, here's these two people who have obviously figured out how to communicate with each other and are both mature adults in their lives and know how to get past conflict, because they're both also like ambassadors in politics. They understand how these things have to work, right? So I thought that was really an interesting, and like lovely relationship to see on screen.
I just love that she was like, they want to come for me. Let them come for me. Like, she is such a boss, man.
Yeah. I jumping off of that too, what I loved in that specific element of the show was Tarina saying, you know, conflict is not something to be feared. It sort of naturally comes up. I forget exactly the quote, but something along those lines. And that honestly feels like the overriding theme of this episode, as well as potentially like an overriding idea of the whole season, because we had, not to get too far into this, but we also even had Wilson Cruz's character, Janal, saying something along the lines of like, well, we, is this a time of peace? We hid the progenitor's tech so that it wouldn't be used during something like the Dominion War. And Burnham being honest about the fact that it's like, it is a peaceful time right now, but like that's, there's no guarantee it stays that way. And that kind of is reflected in all the relationships. And going back into that, what I loved this episode for in particular, is just how it just showed very healthy ways to handle all of these conflicts. Like, you know, between Saru and Tarina, we had that conflict, but also Book and Burnham, they're two mature adults who are kind of breaking up, but also still have feelings for each other. Maybe they'll get back together. We don't know, but it's, and while there is tension there, it never feels toxic or cruel or mean like most, like most of our television and stories and media today are, just for like the drama's sake. You know, they gotta, you got the heightened, like, oh my gosh, they're gonna break up, like, and we gotta be angry at each other over some nonsense thing. And then the same thing with Adira and Gray, which I also really liked. I thought that was handled really well, both as them being kids, I shouldn't say kids necessarily, but like them being younger. And, you know, especially at that time, like sometimes not even just long distance, but you figure out what you wanna do in life, and sometimes that just sets you on paths that aren't in tandem with each other. And I thought them breaking up, but doing so again in a healthy way, in a way that they remain close, remain friends, is so different than most of what we see in TV, which is usually like, ah, that's my ex, I hate him now, or there's some sort of contrived drama or anger, which leads into like more toxic ways of we depict relationships in media generally. And the only negative that I really have to say isn't really this episode's fault to a degree, but especially with Adira and Gray, is, you know, it comes down to like the show has not really given me as much of their relationship as I would have liked to see, especially considering they are sort of an atypical relationship for what we see, not only science fiction, but generally on television, between a non-binary person and a trans man. Like, I've never really seen that anywhere on screen, even though it's in abundance in my day-to-day life because I'm part of the queer community. And so I wish I'd gotten more of that, so that this breakup felt a little like it felt either a little more earned, or I felt a little bit more emotionally invested in it. And so while it's well handled, I feel like it doesn't hit as hard as it possibly could have we gotten more of them. But again, that comes down to like 10 episodes per season, other stuff to going on. But so it's not the episode's fault, but it is an element of criticism that I have.
Yeah, totally. It's the whole like show, don't tell. It's like, oh, we heard you tell us about how you've been holo chatting for months. And it's like, oh, it would have been nice to have seen any piece of that.
Yep, exactly.
I think this is why I missed Short Treks, because to me, this would have been a perfect avenue for a Short Trek possibility with these shorter seasonal orders, you know, with only having 10 to 13 episodes per season. I thought that was like, I think back to the episode of like Tilly and the Queen, you know, and how fun that was when then the Queen did show up and you felt like you knew something because it wasn't from the episode, but you understood their relationship on a deeper level. The same thing with like Saru's backstory episode. There's just such a availability for that. And so I do miss those opportunities. And I saw one of the writers from the,
I was just about to mention that if you didn't,
Yeah, I was like, I think I retweeted it over on whatever that platform is called now.
The artist formerly known as Twitter.
Formerly known as Twitter. But yeah, one of the writers kind of tossed up a section of a script that was essentially what would have been like Adira's Short Trek episode. And I thought it was really lovely. And it was something after I read it, I realized, I think one of the characters that comes into meet with Rainer is the character they're talking about in that in that short script. Anyway, so that was like a fun little like, oh, I wonder if this is where all of this would have connected if we had more time and more episodes. But yeah, I agree with you, Jesse. I think it would have been nice to have been shown, not told, about how their relationship had been evolving over this time. But I thought the breakup scene was very well handled, very well acted, in the part of like, oh, we are genuinely still like have feelings for each other, and it's just going to have to change and grow in ways that support us as individuals as well. And I thought that was nice. to not be like one of you has to sacrifice a dream in order to be with the other person, which is also very common, I think, in media representation. The other kind of push-pull relationship, I guess we could say in this episode, is Tilly and Raynor, which I think is like a fun pairing on screen together. Mm-hmm. What are we thinking about this overly cranky commander?
Look, last week we talked about the fact that I was expecting him to join the cast, right? Like, you've got to have this wise old owl who parts wisdom. That's not right who he is. This feels more like a, you know, I got to bring in the old curmudgeon and then reform them. And like, he's going to have this arc where he figures out how important connection is and yada, yada, yada. We're going like to get there.
Feelings are going to happen. Yeah.
I'm like, on discovery? What? I'm like,
can we get there fast? Because okay, here we go. Like, my favorite part about that interaction was Tilly, because when you think about where we were season one, Tilly has come a long way. And I feel like it's perfect that she's on the ship right now, because when you think about Tilly, not only is she, she's a lieutenant. He kept saying lieutenant. And I was like, do you know who you're talking to? Like, she had your job, right? Like, the only reason why you have a job is because she don't want it, right? Like, she had your job. Like, she's a part of the crew, but she's not really a part of the crew. Like, she has another job if she likes to go to it. So she's in a position to tell you anything that she wants to tell you. And I love it.
She's like, what's the worst you're going to do? Fire me? You can't fire me.
You can't. And her best friend is the captain. What do you like? he can't say anything to her. Like, like that was the beauty of kind of putting her in that situation. And so I'm excited to see his arc kind of progress. I thought they handled it really well, especially that moment where he was like, here's what I figured out just from that 20 words or less. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, analyzing someone's not connecting. And it just kept going. So I really like that, but I'm not, I'm a little jury's still out on how this lands for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure they're going to do a good job, but I'm like, all right, can this not go on too long?
I'm still suspicious. I was like, I always have my radar up with new dude characters. I'm like, I don't know. I'm sus. I don't know. Like, for a while, it was like Shaw's sus, you know, during Picard. And now I'm back to
Admiral sus.
Admiral sus. Everyone is sus. I'm like, Trill security system, if you've been monitoring this, how did Maul get on the surface there at the end? Just saying. You know, if you've been watching this and, you know, the ship's watching it, but now there's this person on the surface. Anyway, I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know. Are you working with them?
I disagree to a degree in the sense that I actually really love Raynor. I understand he's a trope, but he's like a trope that works for me. Like, I love the curmudgeonly old guy who learns how to do well. And part of me is like, yeah, he is a little bit of a distraction in the fact that this is a final season for the show and we're adding this new character. But again, that's not the show's fault. They didn't know it was the final season when they were filming, so I can forgive that. But I also really like him as a contrast for both Burnham as a character, as well as how Discovery has grown as well, because I spoke about this in my own reviews. He feels to me like a really good reflection of where Burnham was in season one, as well as Lorca, as well as this guy who has this very like, I gotta make everything run on time, everyone's just a piece in the machine. And obviously Lorca turned out to be an actual fascist, but there's still that element that you can kind of see in Raynor of I see everything as efficient. I see everything. He says in this episode, like, everyone's of use to me. Like, you have 20 seconds, you have 20 words to get it done. Like, this idea of like use and timing that is very antithetical to what Discovery and also Star Trek should be about, which is like, we're not all here for the machine of Starfleet, but Starfleet's here. We're here to help enable us to be our best selves. And so I think having that character come in. And instead of it being what season one of Discovery was, which is like a dissection of that and then ultimately refuting the end, it's allowing this character sort of be surrounded by a different way of thinking and be changed by it in a way that like Lorca really wasn't in season one, where he became sort of more cartoonishly fascist, mustache twirling at the end. And so I really like that as just a commentary, and I think that can work really well for a final season. And then two, I'll keep this part really quick. He is from the same mold as Shaw, he was one of my favorite parts of Picard season three, and I will say I did like him in season three. I did not like Picard season three overall, so it's not saying that much. But what I will say is I like him better than Shaw so far, in that there's this element of him of warmth in Rainer that we get to see in little bits and spurts, mm-hmm. like at the end there, that Shaw didn't really get, because in that show he was sort of like, I'm going to stay an asshole the entire time, and just at the end, just as I die, I'll learn that I'm a bigot and change my ways and acknowledge Seven. But then also after I die, it turns out I was a good guy the whole time, which that last scene where he's like, I acknowledge Seven should be captain after my, like, undercut his whole character arc. But regardless, like, this works better for me in the sense that he is an asshole, but we see moments of a true person, both in the performance and then little moments at the end, like at the bar with the writing, that I think really showcase a nuance with this character that I really, really love. So I am actually super in favor of Rainer.
I'll say, I think one of the things that this has done for me is it's helped me see Discovery slightly differently. Mm-hmm. Right, because he's so different. He is what you would expect a military captain to be on a military ship. Mm. Right, like this is about business. We're not here to play friends. We're here for real work. Right, so let's get to it. And how you would think, let's go to work. Let's get this done. And then when you look at him in comparison to Discovery. Discovery has to be the most socially friendly, relational ship in Star Trek history, right? Mm-hmm. Like TNG always had 10 forward, but they had the poker game, but they felt like coworkers that were hanging out after work, right? Yeah. Discovery is like,
I mean, when you jump 900 years into the future with some people,
you're on.
Yeah.
There's really no shore leave.
Light trauma bonding.
I will say too, I said this in my, sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
I was just saying in my review too, I also made this point. Rainer does kind of feel like kind of meta commentary on all of the assholes. They're disingenuous assholes who say about Discovery, it's like, it's emotional Trek, real Star Trek. They would just be like, they get their job done and they were always professional all the time. None of this emotional crying all the time nonsense. And I think what with Rainer, in a subtle way, what they're trying to do is kind of combat that and say, like, no, there's a reason why being more open, being more cooperative, being in touch and in good relationships with your fellow crewmates can actually breed a not only professional environment, but foster like actually being able to create some of the best crew in all of Starfleet. So I think that there's a sort of like subtle meta commentary going on with Rainer.
Totally.
To those criticisms.
Yeah, I think it's also for them to be like, I don't know, on screen, once you watch it, it's like if you watched his character and then you stuck his character even in a show like TNG into Voyager, he would also stand out in those shows as being like a very buttoned up, like grumpy curmudgeon who would have some like I could see, you know, Janeway having a little push pull with that person and being like, no, it's important to have, you know, these connections with your crew, because when you do get sucked out into the Delta Quadrant, you have to bond in these ways.
Jellicoe and Rainer would probably get along very well.
Yeah. Exactly. Also, one of my favorite standout moments is every time Reno is on screen, I'm just like, the lines, whoever writes Reno's lines just really nails it every single week. Because like the conversation with Stamets was so funny, where Reno's just like, Nah, dude, I'm not talking about like your kiddo's going to go lose their virginity. I'm talking about like there's a breakup about to happen. And oh no, now I sound like a woo-woo Cosmo lady, which was hysterical. And then the last time I was here, there were chips. Like, where are the potato chips?
What's happening? Yes, here? It's like, where there's snacks, snacks. Like,
I need the snacks.
Yes.
But I do want to get to Wilson.
Wait. Before we move on from Reno, you know, I was watching something where someone was like, you know, I'm the fun uncle. I'm the funkle. Well, like Reno's like the font. Like, she's the fun aunt. Like, she's so wise. It's just like she just roams from room to room with like her Twizzlers, like
her licorice. Yes.
Yeah, dispensing advice. Yeah,
yeah. Like, oh, poor Stamets. You know, are you gonna be ready when she comes back with her heart broken? Like, are you ready for that, Dad? No, it's not gonna be like that. Okay, you say so. And he just goes, really? She might be right. It's the, I'm not going to beat you over the head with the wisdom. I'm just going to depart it and then gradually leave. Let you just marinate in that for a little bit.
I had a coworker for a long time when we would be in like awkward situations, but we've like dispelled everything we needed to in a situation. We called it when you would jellyfish out, you just like slowly morph yourself out of the conversation. And I was like, I feel like Reno is the ultimate jellyfish of a conversation.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
But yes, it's so much needed injections of humor and one-liners that I enjoy. I also think, I guess, so before we get to Wilson Cruz, actually, the Stamets being so excited to perhaps be scientifically relevant again scene only to be crushed by Rainer was such a little, small little roller coaster that I thought Tilly did such a good job of like kind of regrounding us and being like, oh, this is why this is important. Mm-hmm, we need to thrive and allow people the space that they need to thrive in their work environment. And this is not how this happens for Stamets. So listen to me. But yes, Wilson Cruz, we need to talk about this MVP of this episode. I don't know if y'all watch The Ready Room with Will Wheaton after the episodes, but I loved the interview with Wilson Cruz and just talking about how he was like, oh yeah, I didn't tell anyone what my performance was really going to be like until I started doing it. And it's that scene where they do the transition of the spirits, if you will, of the consciousness. And like he said, the looks on on Book and Burnham's faces in those scenes were just really funny as soon as it started happening. And I was like, I wonder how many takes it took for them to get through that without someone like breaking, because is a big swing, but in the best way possible.
You know, my favorite part of Wilson Cruz's performance kind of sums up to me like everything. It's when they leave, they're coming back, they're walking around, and then they see him and he's like laid out on a rock chilling. Like, I was like, that's the ultimate just like player move. Like, oh yeah, I did make it good. Like, he was just like, that epitomizes that character. It's just like really just chill and like understands every move that's gonna happen. It's one of those, he's playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers. It was just so smooth. And I mean, the range that Wilson Cruz has, just, oh my goodness. It was somewhat, not only was it fun to watch, it just fit. Like, it was a perfect note for me. I was like, this is what I need. If there's some humor, there's some suaveness, there's a little bit of action, like it's fun. It just, I thought it worked out really well. He nailed that.
It really gave me kind of like original series shenanigans is what I like to kind of call that vibe. And I feel like we get a lot of it in Strange New Worlds more often, because it is that sort of like adventure of the week. And this did feel, I think, because we're constantly looking for these pieces to a puzzle, because each one is a self-contained adventure of the week as we try to find the puzzle. It's fun to play in those spaces. And I feel like we haven't had, you know, a main cast member possessed by another being in ages, and I was ready for it.
You need a good body swap episode.
You need a body swap episode.
But to your point, Mariah, I think what we're seeing here, and I'd love your opinion, both of your opinions on this, is this season of Discovery seems lighter than the past seasons of Discovery. Discovery's always, to me, has been dark. It's shot dark. It's everybody's very tense. You know, when you think about, like, was the Red Angel, like, it's everything is so serious. This feels lighter. I don't know if that's because Strange New Worlds is having such, like, fanfare and popularity, and they're significantly lighter. But this season of Discovery feels lighter to me. I'd love to know if you guys, if you agree with that, and what your, if you do, what are your thoughts on the less dark Discovery that we're looking at?
I really like it because it just enables these characters to shine, I think, a little bit better in a way that we haven't gotten a chance to see with them. Like, I've loved these characters throughout all four seasons, but each season has had, like, huge stakes right from the beginning, where it's like there's the Klingon War hanging over everybody's head in season one. The Red Angel was kind of the closest to the lightest we had from after that, but even then we were kind of coming off of season one and Lorca, and so Pike kind of brought a big levity to that season, but even then it kind of towards the end got very heavy. And then season three had the burn, and then season four was like this huge, like, mass death everywhere. And so this one, while there is, you know, still a, like, this tech can, you know, possibly, you know, do a lot of damage or whatever that we've seen so far, with, like, given lip service to with the progenitors, like, it just, it, again, it kind of has that, like, fun adventure vibe throughout all of it, and as a result I think it allows the characters to, like, kind of be in a way that we really haven't gotten a chance to really see them do on a day-to-day basis ever since, like, even maybe just like season four, episode one, where we got them for a little bit in that episode, getting to kind of have a day-to-day normal life. And so I really kind of enjoying just the lighter tone to this season. I'm sure, again, we'll get somewhere where, like, the Federation will be in danger or whatnot. Maul and Locke will get the tech or something. But I do really like that these characters get to kind of just, like, exist a bit.
And it's funny that we say this, because it's less like they're living on the edge of peril, but they are trying to answer, like, really big questions. Like, we're talking about the creation of all species as they know it, all intelligent life as they know it. And so it's kind of fun to go back to, you know, we talk a lot about on the podcast how my favorite Trek is always one that's posing, like, some sort of question for us to ponder about society and all of these things. And often it's rooted in something that's currently happening. But I think it's interesting that for this season, they've really gone back to kind of the basics of astrophysics, where you're trying to answer the biggest questions, right? It's like, and I talked about last week, and it's lovely that this has coincided this way, but I'm reading Stephen Hawking's last book that he wrote before he passed, which are just, like, answers to these, or, like, concepts around these huge questions that we have, right? Is there a God? Where did we come from? How did the universe get created? And it's like, those are the ultimate questions of humanity. And so it's interesting that this is the lightest season that we've had, but I think it's because it's such a common question across all of humanity. It's not this slice of, like, oh, how do we process trauma as species, or how do we deal with death, or how do we deal with this? It's like, no, what is the one thing that truly connects every living thing that we interact with? And I think that's interesting that there is that light and levity when you're considering life. I don't know. That might have gotten little too, like, preachy and weird.
No, I love that, because you're just making me think about two things. One is, there's this constant theme throughout all of Star Trek that exploring, like, the desire to explore is what causes us to better ourselves, like the desire to learn, to seek out new life and new civilizations, as they say. Like, even Sisko, way back in the premiere of Deep Space Nine, said, like, you know, the reason we value linear time to the prophets is because, like, we want to know what happens next, like that sense of, like, what's coming next. And Star Trek has always shown, like, characters who are omnipotent, like Q, or have more power, ultimately become incurious, and as a result, don't pursue their better selves. Like, again, I think, like, Q being the most obvious version of that. And so the end of this episode, where Burnham and Culber sort of sit down and talk about, like, some questions don't have answers, and them as explorers who constantly search for the answers, not feeling comfortable with that and wanting to know what the answers, and that's hopefully this journey will bring them there. I'm so curious to see how this season is going to evolve that concept, because I wonder, you know, they seem to be setting up like, oh, we'll get the answers by the end of the season. But I wonder if the ultimate, you know, thought of the season is going to be like, sometimes you have to be okay with just the pursuit of it, mm-hmm. and know that you're never going to get the ultimate answer in the end, but it's the pursuit of that is worthwhile. And it kind of goes back to just my favorite quote in Star Trek II, which is Data saying, you know, we must strive to be more than we are. We may never reach our ultimate goal, but the effort yields its own rewards, which is my favorite quote in all of Star Trek. And it kind of goes to that same idea as well.
Yeah. And I think it would be more, ultimately more satisfying to not have an answer, because mm-hmm, I think if mm-hmm. you put a fine point on this big of a question, it doesn't leave any room for imagination. And that's mm-hmm. like the fun of sci-fi, is leaving the space for imagination mm-hmm. and for the idea of what could come next. Yeah. Well,
I would add to that, that's the heart of science, right? Right. Is that when you think of great science, it's not like my goal is to answer every single question. It's the journey. It's the, like,
it's the method.
Yeah, like, it's literally the method, because true science takes a long time for a truly groundbreaking discovery. And so in that, you are talking about individuals who are saying, I'm okay with the pursuit of the question, right? The pursuit of the answer, knowing that along the way, I will take left turns and right turns, right? I'll have successes and, you know, setbacks, but all of that journey has the potential for me to land an answer that is a big answer, but not the only answer. Mm-hmm. Like, that is at the heart of science. And when we look at something like these explorers, like, you have to be open to that there are going to be doors that you open that you don't get to walk through just yet. And I think for me, when I think about Star Trek, the idea of Star Trek is, hey, let's drop a probe because we can't get to this right now, but maybe the ship that comes after us will. Right? That's it.
The Cerritos will get there.
Yeah. Second contact will happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think science is, you know, most scientific books that I read are very prominent in saying, this is the answer that we have right now, and a better answer might mm-hmm. come along, you know? And yes. So I think, to me, that would be the interesting place to leave this, is like, this is the answer we have for now, but a better answer could come along, mm-hmm. Which I think is way more fun. What did we, to kind of shift a little bit, I loved the interaction between the cloaking giant bug monsters and Book and Burnham, in a sweet day for night to look like an alien planet that was shot in that gorge. But I loved where they ended it, where it was like, oh, this comes back to Burnham's xenoanthropology, which we saw was the reason we even have like the tardigrade DNA. It's like Burnham knows to go back to the basics, which I think is something mm-hmm. that's really lovely about her character, to be like, oh, this is, we have to show that we're not a threat. Of course they're treating us like a threat. We came out with phasers ablazing. And so I thought it was funny where you have like a character like Book who can technically communicate with animals, but it took Burnham to be like, no, I know how to communicate with them. Yeah.
one quick aside too, before I get to that, I just cause you mentioned it, like, can I just say, thank heavens they didn't shoot on the damn volume. Like, allow me my filmmaker digression. Like, I just hate shooting on the volume so much. Like, okay, good. We're actually in a gorge. Thank you. So I did like that. And in true Star Trek tradition, it's just like a gorge with rocks in it. That's
yeah,
every,
that you every love planet. A gorge with rocks.
But yeah, no, I did really, again, it kind of goes to that theme too of like the whole point of Jinal testing them was mm-hmm. To see whether or not they would choose to be violent and just take what they wanted regardless, or if they would recognize that they were causing some level of harm and try to de-escalate and come back later. So I thought that was just a really fun, simple test, because one thing I did while watching the episode, I was like, really? Like the clue that's been hiding for 800 years is just a hop, skip, and a spore jump around the corner? Like it's just there. You just taking a nice jaunt mm-hmm. and it's been hidden for 800 years. But no, it was actually like a really interesting test. And I did also really like that it It was, again, Burnham being this like negotiator and understanding how to be empathetic, and also showing that she can still work with Book, and that while they are, their relationship is in a rough place right now, regardless of whether it becomes romantic or not again, they still have an ability to connect to each other through their tensions. So,
well, and I thought it's just fascinating. You talk about these bugs. Have we seen really a cloaking like being on Star Trek before?
Well, Janelle says that it's the way that their sure. like scales interact with their environment or whatever.
It's sure. I'm going to still say it's cloaking.
But it's like a chameleon. I mean, there are creatures, you know, lots of deep sea creatures that kind of function in the same way. That was kind of what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
And Trill too, as like they've always established on Trill, like every species that comes from Trill kind of has like two states. Like there was the fish in the early mm-hmm. seas where it kind of came out of the water and started flying as well. So like that's like an element of that world building that I like.
Yeah. I thought it was cool. And I mean, the subtlety, the dialogue in this episode was just, and the timing was so spot on for Book to go, and it cloaks, like, just, you could have told us that, like, that was the perfect note at the time. It's almost as though he captured, I don't even know if it's what we were thinking, what we wish we were thinking, right? It was just such a perfect little note, and they were just sprinkled throughout this episode, like this. I'm trying not to say it, but you know, everyone's saying this is my favorite episode of the season. I'm like, yes, but it's episode 3, so that's not saying a whole lot. I am trying to resist saying this is one of my favorite episodes in the series. I'm feeling that, like, I might have to go there. And again, that, you know, Mariah knows that's big for me, because
especially with no space battles.
But I'm saying there's no space battles. It's like there's like the ship doesn't even move the entire time. Like, that's for me to say this might be one of my favorite episodes. That's big. I might have to go back and rewatch some and like clarify that one. But I really feel, for some reason, attached to this episode.
I mean, I think it's like a good combination of like humor, heart, dry. You know, it's got all of the like notes of what you want from a Star Trek episode. So I think it's just like a really satisfying watch.
A space battle.
Yeah, with no space battle. But you had pew pews. There was plenty of pew pews from those bugs, you know.
I mean, and that like phaser out of nowhere thing gets me every time. I'm like, that's so cool.
I also loved the moment where like Book gets the like the stinger in his leg and they say, go on three. And David, yeah. And on David Ajala's like line delivery there, was so he's like, what happened to on three?
Again, that's a perfect line. Like we're all looking like, of course she's gonna pull it out before you pull three, because that's what everybody does. But the way he delivered that line was like, that made it perfect, and not the thing that happens every time that happens, right? Like, so good.
I also love, there's some good classic Trek tropes of like, I know they technically were in a cave, but when the transporters don't work, when you're surrounded by too many rocks, I love when that gets pulled out. That's a constant.
It's 1,000 years in the future, still can't teleport through rocks. Can't do
absolutely
it.
Not. I'm glad to know we'll still have cave episodes of Lower Decks like, to look forward to.
It's literally like, and there's almost a look between Book and Burnham, like, seriously, we can't transport because we're standing next to some rocks.
You know, the minerals, yes, it's minerals, all the minerals' fault. Yes.
Look, the tech officers in Starfleet need to have something to be able to like say, like, look, your jobs are justified. We still are figuring that out, you know.
Still got to make it work. I do want to talk a little bit about Maul and Book. And I feel like it's very poignant that they ended this episode with Book looking at this photo of Maul. And we get sort of that introductory of like, you know, she had a rough childhood and Book has this connection to her father. It was his mentor. And like, I'm really hoping we don't watch Book ruin his good reputation for for someone who has a bright, shiny object like last season, where it's like, oh, I see you want revenge. Let me give you revenge. I hope it's not like, I see you're missing family. Let me give you family. And I'm a little worried for our book. I'm a little worried about book. What do y'all think?
Yeah. So Nicole, who has been up since 4:30, has had to leave us tonight, but I do want to highlight her comment and saying her, one of her hot phrases was, book better not put Maul, who he doesn't really know, above Michael. I will lose it. I think, yeah. I think this, you know, book keeps telling us I'm different. I'm like, you can trust me, take me with you. Like, I'm okay. Like, I can do this stuff. And yet, you know, it's growth and I've learned my lesson, but here we are. I am curious. He is going to be put in a situation. It's coming. Where he is, there's going to be a moment where he's trying to figure out, here I have an opportunity to save Maul, the daughter of my mentor. Like, she's basically like a niece to him, right? To a person who has lost all the family that he's known on his entire planet. This represents family to him versus Starfleet, which feels like his main connection to Starfleet is Michael. Mm-hmm. He's going to be put in that situation. And I'm not sure which way that wind is going to blow, to be honest with you. I just don't know yet.
I feel like the smart thing to do is for Book to be betrayed by Maul, like for Maul to essentially be like, oh, I've had a change of heart. I see you. I see your ways. Like, maybe I can come this way. And then I think her love for Locke will come into play and whatever the backstory is of Locke. And that will inevitably, you know, crush Book in that way. I'm hoping we just don't have like Book being the instigator of betrayal. I'd rather see Book be, unfortunately, be the one on the other side of the betrayal, because I think it's probably it would be easier for me to digest as as a viewer, but we shall see.
Because he's had a second chance. He's not gonna get a third one. I mean, if he does it again, he becomes
the cat with nine lives.
I mean, yeah, but I look at it and go, there's a story here. Mm-hmm. But you also have to take Star Trek fans into consideration, right?
I feel like hopefully you take story into consideration.
Well, no, what I mean is, I mean, as Star Trek fans, we will hate a character forever, right? If we look over, and I think in this situation, if you write Book as a character who betrays Michael, I do not think the fan base will forgive him ever. He will be listed on the column of villains, of Star Trek villains, forever.
Especially since the last season too. And yeah, what for me too, especially with it, is like, I just need to see more of Maul and Locke, and also in their relationship to Burnham, because I'm enjoying them as characters so far. Like, they have the fun little Bonnie and Clyde stuff, but there's not a lot of development with them yet. And it's only been three episodes, so there's certainly more time to develop them. I don't think it's a failure of the show just yet, but it is one of those, like, it's hard for me to be able to extrapolate anything because we're being told a lot about them, especially as Book is tied in that, because we've never really met his mentor, and we know what it means to him to have some sort of connection to family, but we don't really have that much of a connection between him and Maul besides that one scene. So it's like, I just need to see a little bit more before I can extrapolate or really see where it's going to go. But I do, I hope the smart way, I don't know, not necessarily the smart way, I feel like the good story way is to like have in maybe the final few episodes have that moment where Book considers one way or the other, whether or not they'll have him choose to Michael or not will be sort of the big tell. But I feel like, you know, this is like with the asterisk, they didn't know it was the final season, but I feel like if they're going to go for that happy ending, I feel like he might pull for Michael, but we'll see. It could pull a little bit of a sad, bittersweet ending too. So
I think the other thing here is that when we keep saying Maul and Locke, but we're focusing on Maul, because Maul is the character that seems more interesting and that I think Book is drawn to and we're drawn to. I imagine that Locke is going to screw this up at some point. I think Locke is emotionally charged and easily jealous. And I think, you know, I could foresee a situation where Book is near death because of something that Locke did, and that changes the dynamic here. Because I think the idea that Book wants to get to know Maul, even in a more like of a family uncle kind of way, is going to be threatening to Locke. So.
Yeah, and I think we talked a bit last week about how, to me, it's very evident that Locke is more into Maul than Maul is into Locke from that first kind of exchange we saw, and the way that he reacted when they're trying to sell the goods to Fred. And so I would be very interested in how that dynamic shifts and perhaps Maul uses it to her advantage at some point. To get more of what she wants, and perhaps she wants to break away from Locke. We don't really know anything more about their dynamic, except he seems a bit clingy and his face reforms after he takes off the helmet. So.
Yet another relationship dynamic in the episode. See what you did there, Mariah. I see what you did.
Indeed. What happened to the Trill security system? How did Maul get into those caves?
It's just that good. Yeah.
Just that good. And then she was like, I'm going to put this thing on Adira's sleeve. I hope they don't notice.
Go ahead, Mariah.
Oh, no, it's a big question. So you can go ahead.
Oh, I got some little questions. I wanted to just bring up the kind of the 20 word conversations with Rainer. Mm. We get, I guess, some formal introductions of some new faces. But we also noticed, like, I noticed that Owo wasn't there, Detmer wasn't there. We see Reese, but they also kind of dropped this Easter egg that Nilsson's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Because miss that?
I think she might have gotten casted on another TV show.
Well, I was thinking, like, did I miss that before? This is the first time they've kind of let us know that she's not there.
Yeah, I think that's the first they've let us know. I have a feeling some of these are faces we might see in Academy. That's my my predictus. Okay. Also, because I've worked in budgets, I was like, oh, they shot on location, so they couldn't afford reoccurring characters. So it's all guest stars this episode. That's how you manage a budget. And it's just, oh, let me go get Owo. Owo's not here. Just kidding.
I was disappointed because I really wanted to see how old
Detmer and Owo. Yes.
I was like, you can't talk to Owo like that, right? Like, that's not gonna work out well for you, Rainer. Like, that's gonna go a different way that you're not expecting.
It would have been funny. Yeah, that's why I think that happened in my mind.
Like, Detmer's got more side eye than anybody else I've ever seen. So, like, I was looking forward to see them two interact with Rainer.
And I think we'll get it in another episode, but it would have been nice to have had those one-on-ones.
Also, random aside, but I need to put it somewhere.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned you watched The Ready Room earlier. Did you catch that sly little hint with Wilson Cruz?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's Star Trek. You never know when our faces might pop back up again.
And I'm like, little Academy guest starring appearance, maybe. Hopefully, we'll see. So,
I mean, it's taking place in the same century.
It would
make sense.
They've also Mary Wiseman has also have been.
Oh yeah, like been I can't
interestingly tight lipped. Yes, yeah.
So. I definitely think we could see Stamets and maybe Reno at the Academy easily. Mm-hmm. I think that's a no-brainer. And if Stamets is there, it would make sense that we might see Wilson Cruz there as well.
Yeah.
All of that would fit really, I think, really
I hope they're
well.
Just like, I was like, I don't know, in the ultimate like FU to like series orders, they're just like, everyone's in Academy. I don't know what you're talking about. This is our new show.
They're all going to the Academy now. And that's just how they get around it.
The end is they all decide they need to teach. They all just want to go the way of Tilly and they're going to retire the Discovery in that cloud. And that's how that's going to happen.
We're going to teach a bit, Zora. You just go off and do that.
Zora's going to protect the technology, live in this weird little cloud. That's how that ends. The progenitor's tech lives on Zora, and then they're all just going to roll over into Academy, and I would love it so much.
That would be such a great way to be like, yeah, I guess streaming just cancels shows, but too bad for us, wink wink.
Man,
yeah, I do at least
I would love that, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I would love it. I do at least think we'll probably get to see a little bit of characters jump over to Cabby. And actually, you saying Stamets, I'm like, ooh, that would be an inch, because he's like looking for purpose this season. I could easily see his purpose at the end of the season. Like, I should teach. So, yeah.
Well, he was going to leave very early on. He was going to leave Discovery to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. So I'm,
yeah, true. Yeah.
That, I'm calling my shot that he's going to be on Academy. Like, that's,
so
I could
that.
Be wrong.
The two of them but, go over that been, show.
Been very wrong in the past, but that's my shot. I'm calling my shot.
Let the theater geeks rejoice if we get Mary Wiseman and Anthony Rapp over on Academy. So my big final question so far is, do we think the Federation is the right place for this tech to live now?
No.
That was such a quick no.
I mean, I'm thinking about last season when you had the council discussing like going to the, was it the,
the DMA.
The DMA. I was going to call it the DMR. The DMA. Like looking at those cast of characters, I just don't know. And, you know, I realize that I might be xenophobic because I've always loved Star Trek characters, but I think we saw a race that basically had a cobra snake head as a, I was like, I'm out. You snake head guy, I'm out. Like,
nope. That's the same species I'm from out. That TNG episode, right? I believe, right? Like, with the snake and the mongoose people or whatever from way back in season one.
Yeah.
I'm like, No, kick them out of Federation. Like, I can't do snake head guy.
Oh, what's the species they were talking about at that council meeting? They're from the video game.
Oh, the Breen. Yeah, the Breen are from, yes. They're from DS9. They're the group, the helmets that sided with the Dominion at the end of DS9.
Yeah. I just know their storyline gets, I think, more fleshed out in one of the video games. Anyway, I'm excited. I hope the Breen. I have a whole pilot about the Breen if we get to the Breen.
Yes.
Yeah, no, but to answer your true question, I don't know that I trust the Federation to really safeguard like world ending life or death technology. Kern in the chat says no one should control that tech. I agree with that.
I mean, like, do we not want 28 days later, but in space, if it can regenerate people from the dead?
Yeah,
that's always such a bad idea.
Go
ahead, Jesse.
I was gonna say, I swear if they do a character dies and then they bring him back with the tech and then it gets destroyed nonsense in the finale, kind of like they did with season 4, oh man, I'll be upset, because like,
or the Genesis machine.
Yeah. I liked season 4 of Discovery quite a lot. I actually loved the finale, but that element with just Book supposedly dying and then randomly coming back was like such a fake out emotional nonsense. And I was like, so I really hope they don't do that, because that feels like what they're setting up with that to do.
Yeah. Well, and listen, Mariah, I know you love horror.
I do. I'm ready for zombies in space.
That's what I'm just saying.
Like, look, we got a zombie liner in episode 1 of the season. So
if you do this, like that turns into a zombie movie, and those never turn out well, right?
Sorry, Pilos just blew my mind here in the chat. So no bringing back Quajon. Would they use the machine to bring it back? Whoa.
That would be interesting.
Okay, so then the question becomes, you have this machine. You need to destroy it. You're not supposed to do this, right? This is not something you're supposed to do. But if Book has an opportunity to bring back Quajon, nothing would stop him.
Yeah, that would be a legitimate way to get him to buy in on this deck that I would buy as a character motivation. So,
like a mat, and that could be the thing. What if Maul knows what is going on, and this is her opportunity to bring Cleveland Booker back? Where would Book kind of fall in that? You can bring back his mentor and he can bring back Quajon. That could turn him. I think that could turn him.
That'd
be interesting.
Yeah.
Or Maul's mother. I have a theory that Locke is dead and that's a hologram. And Maul wants to use the tech to bring Locke back. Or Locke is seeking the tech to bring himself back in some way. Or he's like, not well, and it's like a hologram version of him out in the world, because I'm still trying to figure out what's going on with his face.
That's a really interesting idea.
Um Yeah, I'm not sure where I land with the Federation having this tech. It feels like a piece of tech that nobody should have. I also am like, it would be very interesting to me if they get to the tech and the tech doesn't actually do what they think it does. And the progenitors didn't actually.
Or like, lols, yeah. This is all just us being like, you don't deserve it. This is a test. We loved you. We're your parents. Now go off and be whatever.
or what if the progenitors are like, oh, we didn't actually even start life. This was like a rumor. We are Mount Olympus. And this was our mythology. You know, I don't know. It could be interesting.
We've been watching the whole time and you guys are awfully entertaining, so thank you for that.
Yeah,
I mean, it could also be that they were lying. That would be a fascinating twist where it's like, we didn't actually create you, we lied to make ourselves like gods for you or something like that. That would be kind of interesting. That would be kind of messed up.
I feel like people would be so upset.
I would love it. I love when Disco messes with original canon in a way that makes people upset.
Honestly, I had there's a friend of mine who, she's a YouTuber who did a video about the chase and why Star Trek doesn't understand evolution. And one thing we talked about a lot of different episodes because Star Trek does not understand how evolution works generally, at least TNG era stuff. But with the chase, one interesting thing with that is there is some, like, there's race science nonsense, pseudoscience bullshit that always try to justify, like, oh, there was like one version of humanity that existed beforehand and everything else is just variations upon that like isn't exactly leading into, but it was like, it's still an element of like, it's not humans, it's not this like ethnocentric human thing, but it is still going of like the humanoid form is still like the ultimate version of evolution that we're all eventually going to go towards. So it's like, it kind of leans into that problematic stuff with that sort of storyline. So it'd be interesting with Discovery to kind of break that down a little bit. So,
yeah. Cause to me, I don't know. I wouldn't be mad at being one of those DMA jellyfish who just like emits pheromones and floats around in some gases. It sounds cool.
We all are going to inevitably evolve into sex salamanders, as Star Trek Voyager has taught us. So this is what the progenitors wanted for us.
That is the ultimate ending. Anything else y'all want to touch on this episode before we wrap it up?
Nothing I can think of. Like I said, I've enjoyed this episode. It really makes me want to see the next one.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I'm excited for next week. Yeah. Anything to plug? Anything to share? Jesse, where can people find you on the internets?
Yeah, I'll do the rigmarole. You can find me mainly at Jesse Gender. That's my YouTube channel where I do video essay type of stuff. Sadly, I've been dealing with more difficult stuff lately because I've been talking about like anti-trans rhetoric and nonsense like that. But I do have a bunch of Star Trek stuff on there if you want to go check that out. I try and have some fun and talk about my favorite nerdy stuff. I also am reviewing Star Trek Discovery as well on my secondary channel called Jesse Gender After Dark. I'm also going to be reviewing Doctor Who as well as Star Wars Acolyte when that comes out, as well as other things that I randomly talk about over there. I'm on the social medias, and then just to mention it, I am working on a science fiction film called Identities, starring numerous folks, but most relevantly here would be John DeLancey from Star Trek. So he was absolutely wonderful, and there's also so many queer and trans folks in the film. We are nearing completion. I'm in the throes of post-production and exhausted from it, but excited about it, and that'll be coming out in just a few short months, so be on the lookout for that. And they'll be on Nebula, which is the streaming service that is distributing it. So that's the quick and dirty stuff.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. Clyde, do you have anything to plug or promote?
No, just excited to see you guys here next Thursday if you're gonna join us in the live chat. And as Mariah said earlier, hey, come hang out in the Slack with us for $2 an episode, right? That's it, just $2, and you get to hang out with a bunch of other Star Trek nerds talking Trek all the time, do some watch alongs. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, I'd plug that. Sometimes I'm active in the Slack, sometimes I'm often lurking, you know,
we trying lurk. To make sure we're in there,
stay out of trouble, no fights. You know, no, it's actually a pretty cool place. Everybody's really nice, and and if you want it, like, it's a great place. Like, if you're watching an old episode and you're like, I wonder what that is, I promise you somebody in the Slack knows some deep Trek knowledge about that thing you saw in the background and had a question on. So it's always fun to like to have those conversations.
Indeed. I had a whole conversation today about Klingon coffee after this episode.
It's fantastic. Like it's such a great place to hang out.
It's a good time. Yes. So you can find links to that at StarTrekPod.co. You can find me on the internet at my name. You know, there's things happening. There's shows I'm working on. I'll be sharing soon for podcasty things. Some fun stuff in the works. Thank you all again so much. We will see you all next time. Live long and prosper. Bye-bye.